Blog Talk Radio.
Greetings and salutations, everyone. This is Carl, and we are doing the Deviate Legion special tonight. We're remembering Mira Furlan. Mira Furlan was an actress who is best known as Ambassador Delin on Babylon 5, and we'll be focusing particularly on that, but she also was on Lost, and she was on several other shows, particularly in her native Yugoslavia and Eastern Europe. Tonight, I have my co-host, who is Limes. Limes runs a show called Terror with a Twist of Limes for us here at DLN. Say hello.
Yeah, good evening, everyone. I am here with Mr. Carl.
And tonight, I want to introduce a special friend of mine that I've known for a number of years. And she is the reason that, at her insistence, I started watching Babylon 5 and fell in love with it. And we want to welcome Vicki Love to the show. Hello, Vicki.
Hi, everyone. Hi, Carl. nice to be here talking about one of my favorite subjects.
Well, you know, why don't we start with you and talk about her role on Babylon 5 and why you love her so much?
Yeah, it seemed like out of all my friends, I don't know why this happened. Usually everyone else is texting me about somebody who has passed away. But it also happened with a couple of other of the Babylon 5 cast members. I was the first one to know, and I just had sat down at my computer the other day and I just started crying. And it wasn't that kind of oh my god type of crying. It just was really kind of a soft from the soul, like, oh my god, how could something like this happen? And I know lots of people out there are, you know, suffering a loss days that, you know, we all just can't imagine. But Mira had this particular way of acting that you knew somehow, some way, no matter what she was doing, it came from this special soul place, you know, S-O-U-L. You know, and so I think that's the biggest reason why the pouring out of all this feeling the past week, I guess it hasn't even really been a week yet, but all of this has really been so, reverent, okay, because she was a person who could tap into humanity. There's a million actors out there. I have two friends whose daughters are on two very important shows. They're out there acting. And one of them has a son also who's out there acting. There are actors are everywhere. But sometimes an actor has that connection to the soul and then can connect to the writer. And that's what Mira could do with this character, Delin, on Babylon 5. She was there from the very beginning when the Mimbari looked really different than humans.
Right.
Then, yeah, on the first pilot, which was an hour and a half, like, movie thing. Then they transformed her a little bit, and she looked more pleasing and had the more pastelish colors and wasn't so alien looking for the series. And then within the series, she changed so that her character, this was written by the, you know, author of the whole series, she changed from strictly her race, Mimbari, to kind of a hybrid Minbari human thing because it was part of the mythos of the story. And so all these transformations were things that she had felt in her own life, and she brought all of that, the humanity, the pain, the love, everything, into this character. And that's, I went through transformation from when I first started watching Babylon 5, I was a completely different person than the time when Babylon 5 kind of started fading out of people's consciousness, like the mid 2000, like 2013 or so, people are not knowing it so well anymore. Back to now, when now it's coming out on Blu-ray, right when my birthday happened. Guess who's getting that birthday present?
Of course.
But I posted on my, I have a Facebook page, Vicky Love, if you want to see it. I posted a lot of videos of her, when she knew that she was sick. She didn't know she was going to die of this disease. And I have to say this is very personal because somebody very personal in my life. I have West Nile virus and it destroyed my health. And people think viruses are not deadly, they are. And then somebody who I can't live my life without has it. It's destroyed his life completely. And so I didn't know she had West Nile. And she didn't know that it was going to eventually kill her. But what she did was, you can go to her website. You can look her up. And she started reading poetry, just reading poetry online. And so I posted a bunch of that on my Facebook and a lot of really poignant scenes from Babylon 5 when Delenn is talking about we're star stuff and, you know, taking that Carl Sagan thing and really, you know, Carl Sagan said it, we're star stuff. But then when Delenn says it, you're like, fuck, it's real.
Yeah.
Okay, that's...
So I'm going to interrupt
that's
for a moment.
That's who she is. No, I'm done.
I'm going to interrupt because, okay, because we have somebody else that joined us. So we want to say hello to Adam. Adam runs our show, Cathode Ray Mission. Adam, are you there?
Yep, I'm here.
Okay, yeah. Good. Well, we're going to kick it back to Vicky because she only has a short time with us. So go ahead, Vic. Sorry to interrupt.
No, it's okay. Hi, Adam.
Hello.
I think that it was the no matter how alien the pilot was, it got me right from the very beginning because of course the writing is so incredible. Superman is my favorite, and so the writing, the story, everything came together in the pilot to make this show very intriguing and special to those of us who helped it grow into the phenomena that it is.
Yeah.
But it's Delenn that when Jeffrey Sinclair, those of you that don't know the show, I apologize, but when Jeffrey Sinclair left and a new commander of this big space station comes in, it's Delenn that bridges. That actually, I mean, there's lots of other characters that keep the action going. But it was Delenn that really bridged all the important foundational stuff from the pilot to the first season to the second season to the very end. And that's how important her character was. And Mira took it seriously. All the time. I miss
her. Absolutely. Agreed.
You know, for me, I'm going to just pop in here for a second. You know, when Babylon 5 was on, I wasn't watching it. And to me, oh, it's just another Star Trek ripoff and so on and so forth. And I had a conversation with Vicky, and Vicky says, you are so full of shit. You
yes,
need
that's
to watch
what I said.
That's exactly what you said.
Yeah, no kidding. I knew these bullshit all the time.
But so anyway, it I moved out of that area and I moved to another job, and we talked over the phone, and I said, you know, okay, I picked up the first season, and I, it was on the DVDs, those big plastic ones back in the day, and I think it was in 2 months I bought all five seasons. I could not believe how well constructed this show was, and each character, I think, represents a specific arc and a specific sort of like the conscience and so on and so forth. But to me, the Len, particularly at the beginning, always dealt with hope and always wanted things to be better. The one thing about the Len, and for those that don't know the series, Babylon 5 is this space station where all the ambassadors get together to work out things. And Earth goes through a very bad situation, and they break from Earth. And so the Earth people come to take over the station, and the Lin of the Minbaris has this wonderful scene where she says, to the invading, she says, the one commander that beat us in the war is behind me. You are in front of me. Leave now. Or
if you cherish your life. If you cherish your life, leave now.
I know the quote exactly. Only one human captain has ever survived the Battle of Ari Filet. He is behind me, but you are in front of me. If you value your lives, be somewhere else.
Be somewhere else.
But
yeah.
the way she delivers it is what really sells it. You would think that somebody's going to be angry and going to be, but no, there's this real calm behind her.
Yeah.
And that makes it more scary to the people that are invading, because they know.
Yeah,
seriously. And that was a choice that she made as an actress, and it works. And this is how good she was during the show. So now that I've said my thing, let's go to you, Adam, because I know you consider this one of what your top 10 shows of all time or something like that.
Well, you know, it's definitely in my top 30 or 40. It's my second favorite science fiction series. Maybe my personal favorite. I think that Battlestar Galactica, the new one, the reimagined one from Moore and Ike, is probably a better show in terms of construction and how it got together and everything. It's probably critically a little better show, but I will always have a soft spot. No, it will always be the big sci-fi show I had that was mine when I was growing up. And Mira Furlan as Delenn was a big part of that because, as you mentioned with that scene, she managed to, over the five seasons of the show, perfectly portray the growth that her character went through and to have moments where, she was damn scary because there was such a confidence. And yet, at the same time, there were moments where she was just somebody in love or she was just a friend that was losing somebody. And there were these very vulnerable moments that she played so well. And, it's really quite an extraordinary performance that I don't think gets the credit it deserves. You know, Peter Jurasik as Londo and Andreas Kaschulis as Jakar rightfully get a lot of acclaim. But Mira Furlan did some damn fine work on that show and deserves a lot of credit.
Yeah.
And
Lines, let's get to you for a second. Go ahead, Big. Sorry.
I just want to, yeah, just one. No, no, it's okay. If you're looking for another really good episode, Severed Dreams, of course, is the one, the go-to. Everyone was talking about the first 24 hours that she passed away. But comes The Inquisitor, where she has to prove that her motives are not selfish, that she is doing all these things not because she's in love with Sheridan, not because she wants to be the head of the Minbari, none of this. She has to prove that her motives are completely unselfish to move forward. The Vorlons are testing her. And that is one hell of a performance she gives in that episode.
Yeah, agreed.
And so is her performance in the very final episode. Particularly that last scene, and there's not even a line of dialogue.
Yeah, I watched that again. It makes me cry.
Yeah, sad. Very sad. Very sad.
Okay, I'm really sorry. I didn't.
Sorry, Carl. What do you say there? No, go ahead, Lines. You haven't had your chance yet.
Yeah, okay. So you kind of preempted, I think we're all pretty much agreed on that scene in Severed Dreams where, she's with the Minbari fleet. So that's kind of my point that I want to reach to, but I kind of want to just say that I was with the show, like Vicky, from the beginning. And I want to kind of explain what it means to me. And that is that it came at a point in the 90s there, at the beginning of the 90s, where we were all used to Star Trek, and we were all used to these sci-fi shows where they were self-contained, and there was always like a reset button at the end of every episode. And I think that as sci-fi fans, we all wanted something more, to the point where we would look for tenuous connections in shows. Oh, this is connected. That person said that, and it's connected to the point where we were almost reaching for connection, because Babylon 5 caught up with sci-fi fans. We were all ready for it. It was just that the networks were so embedded in that, oh, everything's got to be back to the status quo by the end of every episode. So for me, when I first saw Delenn and Mira in the second, I believe it was the second episode of the show, where the Soul Hunter shows up, and she's...
Oh, yeah.
Right. That was where I got that sense of, whoa, hang on, there's something deeper and more spiritual at work here. This has really got a way to go. And when we got to that point in Severed Dreams, we had been seeing the story building over two seasons, two and a half seasons. We'd seen the Shadow War coming in the background, and obviously all this unrest with Earth. We started to realize, well, Earth is not the good guys this time. And we'd never seen this before. I think everyone, Adam especially, will agree with me on this. We'd never seen at that point a show where, we were always like the Federation, and Earth was the cracking heroes that were going to save everybody. And suddenly we were seeing this dark side. We were seeing Earth the way that Earth really is, that we've just gone through for 4 years with this division. And when we got to Severed Dreams, I think it was the episode before Severed Dreams where Sheridan had said, we can't do this anymore. We're seceding from Earth rule. And I remember watching it and thinking, okay, right, they've seceded from Earth rule, but nothing's going to come of this. Because we were so used to these sci-fi shows, we're not going to see Earth go up against Earth. It's not going to happen.
Right.
And then...
I agree.
Right. And we'd never seen it. And then when we got into Severed Dreams, and all of a sudden, the Earth ships were coming through those gateways, and that battle broke out. It was, I apologize, Vicky, I'm going to, use the F word here, but
that's
that point, thank you, it was that point for me where I was like, holy fuck, they are actually going through with this. We're going to see Civil War break out on the show. And to watch them hammer in the station and to see, one poignant moment for me was when that ship was you know, going to attack, and Sherry was going, like, basically begging them, saying, guys, this is wrong. Come on. Stop, please. And then he's watching his own people die. And I think it was right before Elen comes through the gateway with the Minbari fleet. And it looked like they were all going to get completely fucked over. It looked like it was done for. And then she comes in, Anira punctuates that scene with, you know, the quote that, as Adam said it there, you know, the one man that's ever stood against us and lived is in front of me. He is behind me. You are in front of me. If you want to be somewhere, if you want to live, be somewhere else. To me, that was not just a massive moment for her as an actress. That was a massive moment in television sci-fi and television history that paved the way for Game of Thrones, Breaking Bad, The Wire, The Sopranos, all of it. It was the moment where TV was irrevocably changed. And that's, I want to throw the ball back because I don't want to be that guy that just gabs and gabs and gabs, but that is what that show meant to me. And I just, like, God bless J. Michael Straczynski for giving us that and for changing TV for the better. You know, Carl?
Yep.
Well,
yep.
Absolutely.
Yep.
Absolutely.
Yeah, for
and
television. That's it. That whole show changed television. Not just science fiction. Everything. Like you said, Breaking Bad, Game of Thrones couldn't even have been here without it. You're so right. It changed. And we all knew it back then. You and I, we're watching this and we know, because I thought, oh, God, they're going to end the show right now because Sheridan's dead. That's what I was thinking.
Amazing.
Oh, my God.
So amazing to watch. Do you know, Vicky, actually, can I say something just really quick? Do you know what?
Sure.
My dad was never a sci-fi fan. Never. And do you want to know something? He was glued to the screen watching that. I can remember my dear dad watching that, and I could see in his eyes that even he was sucked in at that moment. And that is, if you know my dad, that's special. Really special. So, but sorry, guys, I throw the ball back here now. Anyway,
no, you apologize way too much, Lines. We got to work on that. one of the things that we really have to say here and make it specific is that J. Michael Straczynski, who created and wrote most of the shows, along with Harlan Ellison, who was the consultant, and they were very, very close friends, they were the ones that devised the five-year arc. Okay? And this was the first show with an actual arc, not just in the plot, but in the characters themselves. And he also developed backdoors, which happened with Sinclair particularly, with Michael O'Hare. Because of his health problems and such. But nonetheless, it's the first show that ever did that. Everyone involved.
Yeah.
And that means all the actors and that.
Wait. It was the first primetime show. Because, you have to read his book. Has anyone read Becoming Superman?
Becoming Superman? Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so soap operas do this. They do have overarching storylines for their characters, okay? And for the story, they have to put their stories together. I think it used to be three-month chunks, every 3 months, every back then. And so he took that idea and he pitched it to UPN and the bigger company, whatever it was, MGM or whatever the parent company was, or Paramount, that's it. And he pitched it as 5 years, and they're going, well, we'll look and see. It looks 3 years to us. And then he pushed it through with great writing, great actors, and got the 5 years.
Yeah.
On a dying,
Paramount passed, but then they end up with DS9 and Warner Brothers decided to run with it.
Sorry, if I could jump in there for 2 seconds. You just mentioning DS9 there, Adam. You just made me think of something. That show, let's be honest, I mean, DS9 was great, but that show was going nowhere for 2 years. Like, it really, like, when you look at the first 2 years of DS9, it was really trying to tell classic Star Trek stories by boldly going nowhere. And B5 kicked them in the ass. You could tell they looked at that and they're like, shit, we got to step our game up here. Because, you could tell that led to DS9 becoming more of a serialized show. Because the first 2 years are not serialized. Not at all. And then it suddenly started becoming way, way more. They brought in the Dominion and all that stuff. And that's Babylon 5 in Star Trek. That just shows the influence. They scared the shit out of Star Trek for a few years there. They really did.
Yeah, it's true. That's when the Borg were introduced to the Next Generation. You know, all of Star Trek really started changing because of Babylon 5.
Mm-hmm.
And it
yeah,
was
100%.
Because, yeah, well, it took the Next Generation 2 seasons to actually get its footing also. And so, but that was, everyone expected that. Oh, Star Trek, you know, okay, those were a couple of crappy episodes. But you know what? We'll give them the whole season, you know, back then. But they don't do that anymore.
You know, just to interrupt, since it got mentioned, those first two fairly painful seasons of Next Generation, William Shatner directed a damn fine and rather hilarious documentary called Chaos on the Bridge about the first two seasons. And I don't know if it's still available on Netflix, but if anybody wants to go and watch it, please do, because that thing is fucking funny as hell.
You can find it on Amazon. I don't know about Netflix anymore. That's where I saw it also, but I know you can find it on Amazon, but I don't know if it's for free.
So I want to ask a question of everyone. Okay, getting back to Mira Ferlina, and I'll answer it first for me. That we have dramatic scenes, and we've talked about the one specific one from Severed Dreams, but the characters also had lighter scenes too. And one of the scenes that absolutely just cracks me up is when Mira comes out, Delenn comes out of the chrysalis, and she has the hair. And she asks the bottom.
Only the females can talk about this, and I'm the only female here.
Okay, but you
can
go right ahead.
About that episode. Oh my God! You can't. You have no idea what it's like to be a female and have fucked up hair. You have no idea of being a female, and you know what? Tonight's the night you're going to wear that dress, but you're feeling a little bloated, then all of a sudden you have your period. Thank you very much, God.
I knew
you
this
cannot
was
talk
I
about
knew
that
it.
Episode.
I knew it.
No one may believe this, but I knew that was going to happen.
If you said yes, you
episode.
Did a good job.
I love that episode. I particularly love the way she delivers that last line to Ivanova.
Yes.
Well, you know, yes, I have gotten some more funny things happening.
Right.
Why
so
would I be getting
about cramp?
I really
felt
that scene even more than Ferlin's performance is the response by Claudia Christian.
Right. Right. Like, oh my God, I thought hair was going to be it. I think that's one of the first times in a show like that having your monthly little angel come was just referred to like that. I think that was a breakthrough moment also.
Well, it wasn't the only time they did something like that. I mean, Babylon 5 also is noted for having one of the first instances of showing somebody going to the bathroom, along with, obviously, Archie Bunker. But in science fiction, there's a scene where you actually see a Pakmara just walk right out of a toilet and shake itself.
Sinclair and Garibaldi are also in the bathroom and they're talking. Wait, what about, oh God, okay, there's so many scenes. But yeah, they have a bathroom scene also.
But it's also notable, if I can jump in for a second there, it's also notable as well because it's also one of the first shows where, I mean, it's nothing now, but back then that was the first show where they had like a female and female relationship in terms of Ivanova
Talia.
And Talia Winter. So they were so many firsts. You know, that was a very, very ballsy show for the time, right? So,
that's right.
That's
the 90s.
Big time.
Right. It was like, are they really going to go there? Is Talia going to spend the night at Ivanova's and then they're going to talk about their relationship? What?
Big time. And then I mean, they actually there was no doubt about it in the end either, because I mean, she said in the one where they're all confessing, she said, you know, I think I was in love with Talia. Ivanova says, I think I was in love with Talia Winters. So they left no question mark hanging over that. So.
Right.
But yeah, sorry, throwing that back again, guys. Sorry, Carl, you were asking us. We all got sidetracked.
Are there any other scenes, comedic in nature, that you remember that Mira was involved with?
What about
we
Mira
all
sitting
about...
on the couch watching cartoons with Garibaldi?
Yes.
With the Daffy Duck in the background.
Yes.
And she's eating popcorn.
Yeah,
like, well, absolutely. Absolutely, that was.
And she was still full on Minbari then as well. She hadn't been through the chrysalis, so she still had the warrior kind of look about her. Sorry, Adam, I cut you off.
Forget, it wasn't Daffy Duck. It was the Egyptian god of frustration.
Yeah.
Right.
A household god of frustration. Yes, that's exactly what you referred to him as.
So, one other thing I do want to mention before Vicki heads off into the blue is there was an article that I shared with everyone. And Mira was originally from Yugoslavia. Now, basically, what happened was that there was the breakup of Yugoslavia into Croatia and Slovenia, and you have the Croatians and the Serbs. Now, in one country, here she is, she's Croatian, but she's in Serbian territory, and because politically, both sides then went against her, and then she was basically exiled to the U.S., and of course, with that exile, she got the job on Babylon 5. Now, I don't know any of her Eastern European material, except I did see her in a film by Imar Costa Rica, and I cannot remember for the life of me what the title of it was. But, she brought something. She brought that pain with her. And I think that pain really comes through in some of the things that she does in Babylon 5. I think one of the great ones is where she shows up at the end of the episode where they're retconning the relationship between the two of them. It's in four parts. And she comes up and she's in old age makeup and she just says a couple lines and it's like she just withers
yep.
those people away. And you could just
he was a
hear
good
the
man,
anger.
He says.
Yeah. But do you
yeah,
do you see any of that pain in her performances? So tell us about what you think. Go ahead, Adam.
Who? What? Sorry.
Adam was
going to talk. Oh, that's actually something
talk.
That
you.
I had thought about when you mentioned, you know, when we were talking about our favorite moments, and it was such a small moment but a powerful one that I decided to go with the one I mentioned from Sleeping in Light. But that one from the season 4 finale is absolutely a wonderful little moment, and you know, it's not just the words. It's the look in her eyes. It's the fire in her eyes. But it's also the way the director, who I believe is Stephen First, who played Veer, allows the camera to linger on the faces of the panelists and their response to that withering. It's quite a scene.
Yeah.
Agreed.
Sure.
Agreed.
So go ahead, Vic.
Okay, I'm going to tell a short story first, and it's just a true story. Back in early 2000s, I was working for a media company, and we needed a new receptionist. And so I had nothing to do. I was producing radio and everything. I had nothing to do with the hiring of the new receptionist. I just figured my boss was going to hire some young, cute, beautiful thing that all the guys could just, you know, salivate over. But instead, he hires this woman who, and she was beautiful too, but she had this very thick accent. And I didn't know what her accent was. I'd never spoke to somebody from Bosnia before. And so she spoke very good English, but she also, her accent, she couldn't hide it and she didn't want to. And the one day at lunch, she told me the whole story of how her and her family got out of Sarajevo as it was falling. They went to work that day, and believe it or not, she was a lawyer and her husband was a doctor. And I'm sitting there with my mouth gaping open as she's telling me the story about their kids were in school. The school shut down because there's bullets in the street. And they grabbed their, now they knew that this might happen, so they had already packed bags. They grabbed their kids, they grabbed their bags, and they ran out and they never went back. That's what it was like back then. Okay, so the way she told the story from her real life experience and her whole demeanor and everything, she had a quick sense of humor, but it was not there readily. She was very traumatized by what had happened to her, her husband, and her children, and she was a lawyer who was now working as a receptionist in a soon to be defunct internet company. Okay, it was like this huge shock of events. Mira, her life was like that also. It changed that quickly. And before she knew it, she was in America. She was in New York. This poor woman was stuck in Fresno. But her life changed like that also. But her job, she got to keep her job and bring it over and use all that happened to her and put it directly into the character of Delenn. And that is something I think is extraordinary, that she could do that. That's incredible. So, Carl, if you haven't already posted it, you should post that article so people can read it and understand what I was just saying better.
Yeah, I did post it. I did post it. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So, Vicki, do you see any particular scene where some of that backstory comes through in her acting?
Yes, the one, I can't think of its name right now, but you guys all know which one, where she asks, this is the first time that John says, when I see you again, call me John, when Sheridan and her that take the next step. She asks Sheridan if she and Lennar can go into the sector where the Markhive, I think that's how you say their name, Markhive, are dying. They have the this virus, and it's
going
to kill all of them. And he's like, no, Delenn, you can't do it. And her speech right there, of course she didn't write the words, but the way in which she said it about the caring and the loving that we must show people in this situation our deep compassion and our kindness, because if we don't do it for them, who's going to, and it happens to us, who's going to do it for us if we haven't led by example? And it's just, when you start thinking about everything we've lived through in 2020 and the way in which war can happen at a snap, January 6th, I mean, she just, at that moment, I was watching that scene like last night, and I was just like, oh my God, this is like the universal scene. This is speaking to every human being at every moment of these horrible crises, and
gotcha.
Look at how she's doing. And she wasn't crying; she was using her soul and that experience to just not even plead, but just tell John or Sheridan that's what we have to do if we consider ourselves compassionate people. And it was just real. It was.
Was that
Confessions and Lamentations?
Yeah, that's what it is. Thank you.
Right, Confessions. Yeah, that was a great episode. Great episode. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, the first time I saw this, I was a young mother, and I had children who were always sick. You know, I think they just had the chicken pox, right? And I first saw that, and this was my arrogance back then because I'm such a science person. And I'm like, that can't happen in 2258 because science will know how to stop these viruses, and science will be so advanced in medicine by then, blah, blah, blah. That's what I thought, and now we're living through this. So actually, I was arrogant and stupid, naive maybe. That's an excellent episode.
It is excellent. It is excellent. And you know what, Vicki, if I can pick up off of, like, if I can kind of tail off of something that you were saying there with the science and kind of tying it back to Mira. And, you know, what Carl was saying in that article and what you were saying about her coming to the U.S., that's something that absolutely drives me up the wall in the current what we're going through right now with the COVID. You know, I mean, living in Canada, it is impossible to think of when I walk out in the streets, it is safe. I can speak my mind. I don't have to worry about, you know, politicians, you know, being shot for saying something I shouldn't have said. And people going on about, oh, my goodness, don't take my freedoms away from me. Oh, you're not taking my – because I have to wear a piece of cloth over my face. Oh, it's like communism. And then you look at what, you know, people like Mira went through in the former Yugoslavia.
Right.
Go and experience life under a dictatorship or in a war-torn land where you can be crucified, condemned for your
religious, your spiritual thoughts, your political thoughts, and then come back to me and tell me about how your freedoms are being taken away because you have to wear a little piece of cloth on your face. You know, this came back to me today when I was reading that about Mira, because, you know, and I think Carl and I were talking about it. If she had stayed there, she would be dead. She wouldn't have been around to give us, you know, this wonderful art that she gave us. And, you know,
right.
I don't want to ramble, but it's what goes through my head when I, like when you say about being all about the science, because I'm the same way. And I'm all about the, you know, don't talk about your freedoms being taken away until you know what it really feels like and you've walked in those shoes. But,
that's what,
I'm sorry.
Exactly.
That's
how
my
I
rant.
Felt.
I apologize.
I felt that exact same way when this woman who's now been reduced to, you know, she was not feeling like she was reduced to a receptionist. She was happy and very thankful that she and her family were alive. They were
right,
just happy
right.
to be alive.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
that's what I got from the article, that Mira was happy to be alive.
Mm-hmm.
Bless her.
Absolutely. So Vicki, before you go, do you have any final thoughts or anything like that?
I would encourage people who have not watched Babylon 5. Okay, wait. I'm a member of lots of science fiction groups, right? And I hear a lot of first-time Babylon 5 viewers like, oh, it didn't stand the test of time. Oh, the CGI is so terrible. Oh, the prosthetics is so terrible. And I'm really, really sick of that kind of thing. That means that you don't even like story. So what are you even doing bothering with us who love story? So I would just say that anyone out there that loves story, give Babylon 5 a try. Try to look beyond maybe 1990s. Technology and look at the writing, because the writing and the acting is what really, and they did it on a shoestring. Just because
yeah.
they were allowed to make it doesn't mean they got money to make it, and they did it
yeah.
on a shoestring. So I thought, I personally love the color palette. I think they did great with the shoestring, but I think it's one of
here,
the most
here.
Fantastic writing efforts, along with acting efforts of all TV and most especially science.
Hear, hear.
Absolutely.
That's it.
Amen.
Man, I really enjoy Limes. I'm really glad I got to meet you.
Bless you, Vicki. The feeling's mutual. The feeling is mutual, my friend.
I'll have to listen to your show now, okay?
Thank you. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
By the way, Vicki, we might as well do this now. Limes, why don't you tell Vicki who is going to be on your show on March 1st?
Oh, yeah. Please listen in, Vicki. We're going to be chatting with an absolute legend. Dee Wallace is going to be on the show.
I saw your advertisement, and I think that is awesome. Of all the things I've seen her in, I still remember Cujo as my sitting in the theater going, oh, fucking A, man. I wouldn't want to be her.
Oh, boy, terrifying. Yeah, absolutely.
Oh, man.
Yeah.
Yeah,
so,
we're very proud.
Yeah,
and I want to say that. I also want to say that Limes did this on his own. He contacted
did
a
what?
PR person. He did it all on his own.
Thank you. Wonderful
That's
lady.
Awesome.
I can't wait to speak with her. Thank you.
You know, my old writing, she's not old. Forgive me, Bonnie. My one of my best mentors, okay, writing mentors, she said, you know, just reach out to them. Everyone wants to talk about their life. So just reach out to them. They'll mostly say yes.
Amazing.
Except, yeah. I can't. I've tried Brad Pitt, but he just won't talk to me. Damn it.
Oh man, that's awesome. Awesome.
All right. Well, thank you, Carl, for inviting me.
Oh, you're very much, and you're certainly welcome to stick around. But I do know that you have. You need to go. You had grandchildren in, and you and I have got the walker out. We need our naps and so on and so forth. So again, I want to thank you very.
Well, you're welcome. I'm just really what I have to do is prepare for work in the morning, because I still work, and so really I have to prepare for that. Online teaching is a bunch of BS. I can tell you that right now. Okay, I'm fired.
Oh, but Vicki, one other thing before you go, I really do want to thank you for kicking me in the ass and making me watch Babylon 5.
Yeah,
because you made me a fan for life. Seriously,
well,
and there was no way I was going to do this show without you.
Yeah, well, thanks for asking me. But, you know, one of the clear memories of my very old dinosaur life is telling you, who the hell do you think you are telling me that this isn't a good show? Oh, I remember so well.
She's always been able to control me. It's a good thing.
So anyway, yeah. Yeah, well, thanks for the opportunity, too, because even though I've said a lot on my Facebook page and to my friends and all of the other people, being able to, you know, talk about it with people that love it. I know Adam loves it, and Limes, you absolutely are a Babylon 5 fan.
I love it.
Yes, and you, Carl. I know you finally got on the train.
Yeah, it took me a while. It's hard for me to run. What can I tell you?
Well, here's the thing. It took you years. You wouldn't even watch it with me. So, come on.
Well, you know, I will say this. I do also remember at the time that the Sci-Fi Channel had two shows. And you loved...
The
one with Zahn.
With
Zahn, okay? What's the name of that?
Oh, Farscape. God, Farscape.
Yeah, she was a Farscape fan, and I was the other show on Sci-Fi, which I loved at the time, and still do, is First Wave. And
yeah,
so we would argue about
there.
That, too.
That tells you the difference. Who can pick the winners and who can pick the losers.
And who picks the bastard stepchildren? That would be me.
No, First Wave had some good
thanks
stuff,
a lot
but
for
they
being
didn't have the writing. Yeah, you're really welcome. And Farscape, if you're going to do a Farscape show, I want to be on that. I'll just say
okay.
that now.
Okay, cool.
Okay.
We could do that.
All right.
We could do that. All right, Vicki, thanks a lot for joining us, okay?
Yeah,
have a good night,
thanks
Vicki.
For putting up with me, you guys. And, yeah, have a good rest of the show. Break a leg and all that.
Okay, fair enough. So it was really nice to have Vicki with us. Yeah.
Yeah. If I could pick up on something that Vicki was saying there as well, and I didn't want to get into it for a second because I knew she had to run, and I know she probably would have wanted to stay around. But let's all remember something else about Babylon 5 as well. You know, they were living under the threat of the axe every season. I mean, it was never, to tell something so ambitious, and it was never ever guaranteed that they were coming back the next year. They were literally like clawing for their lives for every season.
Yeah.
Well, they were supposed to end on the fourth season.
Right.
And then
right.
after
they
shot everything,
they, know, right?
they decided to have a fifth season. It's like, oh, what the fuck do we do now?
The thing is, is what had happened is Straczynski had always planned it for 5 seasons. And when he looked at the writing on the wall, and it appeared that everything was going to have to conclude in season 4, what he did was he brought forth the main plot elements, got rid of some softer beats that would have filled up a few episodes, and that's part of why season 4 is such a rush of plot development. Boom, 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 every single episode. I mean, the Minbari Civil War only lasts like 2.5 episodes. It was supposed to be like 3.5 or 4 episodes, just for an example. The episode where Sheridan was captured. Yep, sorry, spoilers. That or the interrogation episode was going to be the finale.
Yeah.
The Earth Civil War and retaking was going to end up in the first like four to six episodes of season 5, and you know, the Shadow War was always going to end the way it did, but there may have been an extra episode in there to allow a little more breathing room. That's basically what we lost.
It was going to go a little bit longer, right? It was still going to wrap up that way, but it was going to
And he always planned Sleeping in Light like he did. But that's what happened is they had he filmed Sleeping in Light. And that's why some of the characters that are in there are still in there, including Claudia Christian as Ivanova, because, of course, she famously left the show between seasons 4 and 5.
Right.
Guys,
you know,
can I ask a question? Can I ask you guys a question? And I'm going to start with Adam. If you had to pick a favorite episode, what would it be?
Oh, fuck. Damn, that is really, really hard. You know?
Right.
Shit, you know, I want to go for something big and dramatic, and I want to go for, you know, something like maybe, you know, something from season 2, 3, 4. But you know, you're asking me a different question. You didn't say what was the best episode. You asked me
what your favorite
episode was. What, and I'm going to take that as the one that I got the most personal pleasure out of. And you know, that's going to have to be a toss up between either Soulmates or Day of the Dead.
Day of the Dead. Yeah.
And the thing is Jane Carr's performance as Timov in Day of the Dead is just extraordinary. And what Peter David did with the wives in the Centauri trilogy, the Legion of Fire trilogy, what he and Straczynski came up with for that trilogy of books is extraordinary. And if you haven't read that, anyone out there, do yourself a favor and pick up the Technomage series, the Psycourt series, and the Legions of Fire series, or as I call it, the Centauri trilogy, because as much as Babylon 5 is a self-contained universe or self-contained world in those 5 seasons, there were things that were meant to go to potential sequels, which we did get the aborted sequel of Crusade. And some of that material is in there, and it's really, really important to see that.
Yeah.
I wanted to see the Telepath War.
Well, you basically do in the Psycor trilogy. You don't get to see it as much as you'd like, but you basically get the idea of what happened. But the Centauri Legion of the Legion of Fire series is quite good. It tells a lot about the Drak, and you get to see some great scenes with Sheridan and Delenn's son. You actually get descriptions of David, and you get to meet him and see what he's like a little. You also get to see just how Veer managed to get into position to become emperor.
Right, yeah.
And all I have to say is, oh, Veer. I'm not going to say more than that because I don't want to spoil it for anyone. But, yeah, and you will have sympathy or empathy for some of Londo's wives that you may never have thought you would have before.
Okay. Yeah, I'm going to read that.
What about you, Carl? What's your favorite?
It's really hard. I have to mention three, and two are connected. But to me, the jaw-dropping moment in Babylon 5, the one where my jaw just completely fucking dropped, was Babylon Squared, and then the one in season. Yeah, War Without End. And what happened to Sinclair? It's like, holy shit. And I'm not spoiling it. And then again, of course, it has my favorite character in it, too.
Well, you know, the thing about that is an episode, and I have to mention this here, where if you watch the pilot, and I don't mean the original version of the pilot, but the proper version of the pilot, the recut version that's got everything they took out, and it's got a new score, and they rebalanced the soundtrack and everything, that has a single line of dialogue that will somehow stick in your mind, and in the moment of revelation, as I will call it, you suddenly go, holy fuck, this really was all planned out.
Because it feels like
the previous 58 or 60 episodes or whatever it was at that point that you were watching were all one part of one big-ass story.
And those two episodes, taken together, if you watch them, you know, one after the other. It's amazing. And, of course, there's always Zathras.
Are you sure it's Zathras and not Zathras?
Okay, well, let me put it this way. Vicky was just on, and our relationship is basically that scene between Zathras and Ivanova. That's our relationship.
Oh.
Because I drive her crazy.
Zathras tells.
Zathras never have anything nice.
The other episode, and there are several, but to me, you mentioned Day of the Dead, which I love. And I think season 5 gets a lot of flack, which I think is a shame. But the scene from the bridge, which is the only episode that Harlan wrote. Harlan Ellison wrote that one, and that's the two maintenance people. And I think that's a wonderful episode. It also
he provided the story, and Straczynski did the script. Yep.
And the thing about it is, I actually thought that he wrote that. I'm not sure.
He did the story, and
I'm correct with that.
Yep. Co-write with Straczynski. He actually co-write an episode with Straczynski. So Straczynski's streak, everybody thinks it ended with Gaiman's episode Day of the Dead, but in a sense, his huge streak of nobody helping him on a script really did end with a View from the Gallery, which I believe was like episode 4 or 6 of season 5.
But there's one line in there where the two of them are there, and they see in the background Londo and Jakar arguing. And the one turns to the other and says, how long do you think they've been married?
Yeah, big time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, seriously. I love that episode. I freaking love that episode. And I love the idea. You know, and of course now Star Trek has the animated things below deck. You think they might have gotten the idea from Babylon 5? Maybe?
Maybe.
Maybe?
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
One of the things that bugged me about season 5, though, one of the things that bugged me, and I know you guys are going to be like, oh, come on, Limes, that's a silly thing to get bugged about. But as my son will tell you, sometimes I get bugged about silly things because I'm like that. I got fed up with Marcus. Not Marcus. What was the guy? What was that? The head of
the
rebellion. Yeah, what was his name, Ian?
Yeah.
What was his name? I can't think now. But
I'm working on it.
With him. Yeah,
I'm working on it.
I can't think what it wasn't Marcus. It was
No, it definitely wasn't Marcus.
No, because he was.
Hold on.
Anyway.
Yeah.
He's working on it. I can't think. Never mind. Anyway, I got fed up with him talking about his old telepaths. The telepaths. Say fucking
right.
Telepath, man, for the love of God.
Byron. Byron. Byron.
Yeah, Byron, that's it, yeah. Yeah, Byron and his telepaths. I got fed up with him saying telepaths. I know you're probably both sitting there thinking,
Byron is a fucking wreck, but you know I do feel oh God, and I just forgot her name, the redhead that played Lita. What was her name? Patricia Tallman.
No.
I do feel
Lita
for her
Alexander.
because
Lita.
She said, you know, had Claudia ended up staying for season 5, she would have been in the Byron story. So I don't know what the hell I'd have been doing. Not much.
Oh dear. Anyway,
so I have a question for everyone. And talking about the major characters, okay?
Yeah.
And we all talked particularly about the Lynn today and Mira's work as the Lynn. Do you have a favorite character, major character? Let's go with Adam.
You know, I usually go with Jakar, but sometimes I'm really fond of Londo or Veer.
Yeah, they're good.
Okay,
yeah.
Pick between Londo and Veer.
Just on what we get in the show, I'm going to have to say Londo. Based on what we get in some of the ancillary material, it could be Veer. But overall, I think Peter Jurassic as Londo may be my favorite character just because I really do like those super tragic characters. I don't mind characters that fuck up, make big mistakes, but you know, at least can acknowledge that even if they have to accept the consequences of their response of their actions, and it's great stuff. And in fact, the way that the last 5 or 6 episodes of maybe even the last 7 episodes of season 5 play out, mainly having to do with Londo's story, that's one of the reasons I don't get the full hate for season 5. I mean, yeah, sure, the telepath stuff in the first 10 or 11 episodes is absolute shit. But besides that, you know, I think there's a lot of fan hatred even to this day and pushback against Tracy Scoggins as Lockley. But, you know,
Lockley
is what she is. And, yeah, and the rest of the show around it was fine. It was Babylon 5. I mean, it was Babylon 5 season 2 level. It wasn't season 3 or 4 level, but it was season 2 level, and that was damn good.
Yeah, agreed.
I like Luckily.
So how about you, Limes, a favorite major character?
Well, you know what, in all honesty, I have to say now, and there's by default, it has to be Jeffrey Sinclair, because, you know, I liked him back when, and I was always sad when he was gone, and I was like, oh, man, like, why did he leave? Why was he gone? And now that I know the story of what Michael O'Hare went through with his mental illness, and the fact that I know now that he was literally clinging to the edge of a cliff as he was shooting those episodes, of what he brought to the show while he was basically fighting to do it, it brings a tear to my eye, and because of that, season one is my default favorite season now, because I'm just like, wow, you gave.
Well, you know,
this
rumors had always persisted about what happened to him, and
I never heard them, Adam. I never heard them.
Yeah, rumors had always persisted. There had been, well, he got into a fist fight on the set, but that's just bullshit. And then it was, well, he's not getting along with some of his co-stars, which was true, but it was because Jerry Doyle was a pompous fucking conservative asshole who decided to try to push him over his mental edge by fucking up and being an asshole, something that you know, we can see on his odious talk show that he drank himself to death with in Vegas a few years back. Yes, I absolutely hate the man. I loved him as Garibaldi. I have no love or respect for him as a human being. And particularly if you listen to any of the commentaries that he did, Bruce Boxleitner and the other people, when they were doing actors' commentaries, kept having to tell him in the middle of the commentary, shut up and be respectful, and he never was.
Well.
But this is all to say that there had been rumors here and there that there was something off with him. And when I heard that, I was like, did he have a mental illness? Did he maybe have like a breakdown or something with drugs that pushed him off? I said, it's really a shame. Well, years and years later, I was in New York, and he was a New York actor. I happened to spy this guy on a street corner. It was him. And I
wasn't
too far away, maybe a foot or two, and I looked and I was like, You're, and he went, yes. And I said, Babylon 5. And he said, yes. And I said, loved the show, loved your performance. And it was almost like you could tell there was something, I don't know, maybe his meds weren't quite kicking in that day or something. But he kind of said, he gave a little smile and said, thank you. And I said, no, thank you. And that was me meeting him, but I could tell right then and there. I was like, yeah, this guy has some mental issues. I just hope that he's been able to get the help. And, you know, it appears that at least for a while he did, and I'm glad of that. But, you know, it's always sad when mental illness takes you down.
Oh,
absolutely.
And
that, of course, brings the tragedy of Babylon 5. It seems like it's a really cursed show. How many people are gone from the show?
Almost
everybody. God. Yeah.
Almost
really.
Everybody.
Let's do a count here. Zathras, Sinclair, Garibaldi, Dr. Franklin. Dr. Franklin.
DeLand.
Veer. Jakar.
Veer.
DeLand. Like they're, you know, like it's what's his name? Jeff Conn. Wait, he played Zach Allen. He's gone.
Zach Allen.
Like, there's virtually no one left.
Like, it's great. And that's just the actors. That's not the producers. That's not the tech people. There are a bunch of tech people.
Yeah.
The producers that are gone. Don Nutter is gone.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, this show seems to be cursed. But getting back to favorite characters, there's one character, and I think the arc is the most amazing arc in this show, and that's Jakar.
Oh, yeah. No question.
Jakar, nobody has that arc. And seriously, to see where he starts as this asshole, and then he becomes the spiritual leader of Narn. And to
do not
believe
stop
it.
The Book of Jaquan. It is disrespectful.
Yeah, but to see this and believe it, and there are so many great speeches that he gives, and it's just amazing. And of course, you know, I mean, being a church organist and being spiritual myself, it means a lot to me to see that. And I just think he's the greatest character in that show. And there are so many great characters. It's not even funny.
Yeah.
Seriously.
Agreed. Agreed.
Oh, yeah.
Agreed.
I mean, it's chock-a-block with memorable characters and scenes, and it simply is one of the greatest shows ever made. I have a pair of friends, very good friends, and they just don't like the show. They're big on Trek. But, you know, I showed it to them, and I think that there really will always be this divide between people who only see science fiction as following the, quote, rules of Star Trek, and then there's all the rest of us, and that's fine. But for the rest of us, Babylon 5 is probably going to end up being one of our shows, I think.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and as I said at the beginning, Vicky basically kicked me in the ass, and it took me years to even try it. And I finally did, and it's like, what the hell was I thinking?
Well, you know, I was a Babylon 5 guy from early. I'd seen stuff in Starlog, Cine Fantastique, and TV Guide about this show coming up. And I remember that they did this spread on like five or six new series that were coming up, including Space Rangers, Time Tracks, and the pilot movie for Babylon 5. Now, Jeff Jarvis, who was the lead critic at TV Guide at the time, did not like Babylon 5, and he mocked it. He mocked it for the hairstyles. He mocked it for the, quote, gimmicky CGI. He mocked it for superbly bad dialogue and a terrible plot with threadbare characters, which almost seems like he just found something that he wrote in high school and punched it in. But he also said the producers must be idiots or crazy, as they seem to think they can get 5 years out of this show. Even if it goes to series, it won't last 5 weeks.
Interesting.
So I remember the show when I was there from the beginning. As Londo said, I was there at the dawn of the Third Age. So you know,
mankind.
Yep. And it was great seeing it, although I will say I was never more angry at a network than when, or a TV station, I should say, a TV station specifically, than when the station that carried Babylon 5 in my area suddenly dropped it about 5-6 episodes into season 3.
Jesus, that's not good.
Yep, and I wasn't able to catch up until later. But let me tell you, you know, the show had just finally, end of season two, beginning of season three, caught fire. It was never a big ratings hit, but it had a lot of buzz. You were seeing lots of articles, people talking about it. And I remember I'd go into the comic book store every week, and someone would say, well, did you see what happened? And I've got to turn around and leave and go the other way, because people were talking about Babylon 5. I didn't want to fucking get spoiled about shit. And so I managed for like the next year and a half to avoid spoilers. No, I was there from the beginning. I love the show. I love the show so much. I bought the discs. The discs went bad. And here a few months back, I managed to repurchase them. That's how much I love this show, is that I bought it twice.
Great show.
They've just put it on iTunes remastered, right?
I think it might be on iTunes in some places,
Max.
But it's HBO Max.
Yeah.
Okay, cool, yeah. And
I think you are correct that iTunes and Amazon may have it in high def for digital purchase. It doesn't look like we're going to get like a Blu-ray, but never say never. As the Am La Shock said, faith manages.
Absolutely. And now, just one last thing before we go. Since this was particularly a show about Mira Furlan, let's all say our last words about her and her portrayal of Jolynn. Let's also not forget that for American audiences, she was also had a recurring role on Lost for 3 seasons. And I never watched Lost, so I can't say anything about Lost. And also,
I actually stopped watching it around the time that they were really getting into her character. So I only watched like the first 2 seasons, and then I bailed on it. So I can't say much for her role as Rousseau.
Right. But what I also want to say is check her IMDb, because you would think that that's the only thing she did. She worked up until the day she died, basically. You know, most of it being she went back to Croatia in 2000, did lots of theater there. She did lots of TV shows in Eastern Europe and Germany in different languages. She spoke English. She spoke German, I think Italian, and of course Croatian. So, you know, I mean, she worked all over the place. And I just hope that we get a chance to see her other work.
Yeah,
that somehow that Netflix or Amazon Prime will bring these things in so we can see them. I would love to see that.
Yeah, I agree.
So I'll go to each one of you. So whoever wants to start, either you, Limes, or Adam, I don't care.
I'll let Adam start.
Yeah, you know, she was a terrific actress, lovely, intelligent, brave, sensitive, and it came out in the portrayal of Jolynn in particular. You know, yeah, she was an actress, but she also apparently was able to channel quite a bit of her own self from everything I've read into that role and make it accessible and unique to that role. She was a great one, and she'll be missed.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Lines?
Yep. I'm just going to say, I'm going to keep it real short and just say that I always found her beautiful inside and outside. I love what she brought to the role of Jolynn, the strength, the sensitivity, the intelligence, all of it. And you know what? Just thank you for being there as a sci-fi fan at a point in my life where I really, really, you know, needed that something more. You know, and she and all of the light cast of Babylon 5, you know, Jeffrey O'Hare, everyone, love them all. They'll be with me forever. Good night and God bless for me. And your words, Carl?
Well, you know, I'm thinking, and one of the things I loved about her as an actress, as Delenn, was there was so much there. You know, I can remember a couple scenes where she's talking to Sheridan on the garden, and that's where the star stuff is, quote. And also, one of the things that really we didn't talk about was when she was part of the Grey Council. And when she was part of the Grey Council, her whole attitude changed. Right? And her delivery as an actress and so on and so forth. So there were these shades in everything that she did. You know, we talked about the comic scenes and so on and so forth. But you know what? The beauty of all those shades comes down to three words that she would say. I am gray. Gray is not the absence of color. Gray is the amalgamation of color and all the different colors of our life. And none of us are perfect, but we all try to be. So to me, Delenn was a very light gray. And thank God for that color and thank God for her.
Amazing.
And that's what I have to say about the character and about Mira Furlan. We will miss you, my dear. So we're going to go into a little bit of gatekeeping here, and we have this show. But, of course, we have a show tomorrow. Do we not?
Yes, we do. Yes, we do.
Okay, go ahead.
Me and Amy will be, and obviously yourself there as our producer and mentor, will be online tomorrow night, and we will be discussing our gateway drugs to horror, be they candy, be they comic books, be they cartoons on a Saturday morning, all of those wonderful things that as kids led us on the path toward lifelong horror fans. And I hope our listeners will join us tomorrow night because it's going to be a really, really fun show.
Okay, and on Tuesday, I'm going to be a guest on Hatchet Radio on Keith Hayes' show. We're going to be doing a Zoom chat with Jeannie Silber. Jeannie Silber was just awarded a Lifetime Achievement Award from ABN for acting in films in the 70s. And I'm going to be part of that particular panel. And then on the 9th, we will be having a show with director Tim Ritter for the ISF podcast. And then on the 10th, we're going to do a show with Rachel, and be down the rabbit hole with Rachel. And we're going to be doing singing comedians. And that's what we will be doing on the 10th. So that's what we have scheduled for Deviant Legion. Adam Limes, thank you so much. I also want to give a shout out to Vicky Love for joining us today.
Yeah.
And that Vicky joined us. And she's quite a character, and it's always good to have her on.
Seriously. Amazing lady.
She has a recurring show. It doesn't happen often, but it's with KSDAD Radio, and it's Vicky Loves Sci-Fi. So you want to take a look for that, too. There we go. That's what we've got. Again, thank you very much, gentlemen. And we will see you tomorrow with Tara with the Twist of Limes. So there we go.
Great stuff.
All right, folks. Thank you very much. And good night.
Good night.
Adios. Take care.
Okay, you too.